Welcome to the Independent Kiwi Show. I'm your host, Paul Carruthers, and this week we're talking to Suzanne Posel in the United States. Suzanne, you're a part of the Occupy movement, a big part of the Occupy movement, I understand. And this week we're going to be talking about media bias and media corruption and media influence, the influence of the mainstream media on populations, and just as importantly, how the media acts as a metaphor for the degree to which people really need to be deceived and sort of lied to these days in order to remain within their comfort zones. We're still going to pick that apart in this interview and talk about the psychology of that to give people a better understanding of why they're buying into mainstream media messages and allowing themselves to be influenced by it. So this is about encouraging people to take personal responsibility for the degree to which they are, in fact, influenced by the media. So welcome, Suzanne, and hopefully we'll be able to rip this subject apart.
Absolutely. I do want to correct you. I am not a part or affiliated with the Occupy movement at all.
Okay.
The name is just appropriate. When I look into things, I keep finding corporations. And corporatism is the conduit by which a lot of this shenanigans are able to take place. So occupying corporatism was just the appropriate term. But I do get that a lot. And I have written some articles about the International Republican Institute. If you want to understand Occupy Wall Street or many of these other revolutions that have gone on throughout the world, and including some of the ones that have tried to have kicked off here in the United States, the International Republican Institute is a place that you should look at first to understand exactly what's going on there.
Okay. This problem is endemic. It's endemic in right across the whole world. It's not limited to the United States. It happens in Australia, New Zealand, the UK, every other country. We're in a paradigm now where the mainstream media has such a loud voice. I mean, they dominate. It dominates absolutely every narrative these days. It permeates everything, including human consciousness, to the degree where Vinny and I have talked about this in previous shows, and I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, Suzanne. We've talked about how even people we know personally who see themselves as highly intelligent people who are activists in one form or another, who see themselves as part of the so-called truther movement, who pride themselves on being highly conscious individuals, and yet we continue to see evidence. I see evidence all the time of how those people still are so influenced by the mainstream media that they ultimately, you know, they need confirmation from the mainstream media from other sources is in fact correct. So that just gives you an indication of the degree to which the mainstream media influences all of us. And I'd be really interested in your thoughts about that.
It is very, very hard to wash the brainwashing out because it is generational. And with each generation, there are trials and tribulations, and how that generation handles those moments that define that generation dictates the propaganda that comes out as a result of those trials and tribulations. Also, the direction of how the movement goes or how the protest is steered is controlled by pre-propaganda that comes out to sort of uproot some people and maybe give them that little nudge that they needed to go ahead and stand up and do whatever it is that they were told to do. Yep. So we have a multi-generational problem that is going on, and psychiatry has been studying us for forever. The propagandists, the media, marketing and sales, corporations, they have all been studying how we do things and why we do things and what will prompt us to do things. And what they're looking for is the emotional reaction, the initial emotional reaction. That is what branded loyalty is about. That is what icons and branding itself is about. That's what the pitch and the sale is about. Lots of people like Zig Ziglar and Jim Rohn and Brian Tracy. If you don't know these names, you should probably go look them up on YouTube, because these are the people who are big in the last 20 to 30, maybe even 40 years of writing the pitches and the sales that has made their way into media of all forms. And so when you see these celebicasters and you see these conspiratainment infotainers talking, if you understand and if you recognize the pitch, you can hear it coming out of their mouth. And then you realize, wait a minute, this is a sales pitch. So what do they want me to buy? Is it an idea? Is it a product? Do they want me to be loyal to them? Do they want me to identify with them so that when they're attacked, I will jump in and point out all the wonderful things about them and vie for them? What are they looking for from me? Because at that point, when I hear the pitch, I know that I'm being marketed to. And that is the problem. The problem is the marketing is so deep and so integrated that even awake people are not awake because they don't recognize the pitch. And they are being sold down the river because of it. Whatever movement, whatever sway happens, they go ahead and follow along. It's crowd psychology. It's what Gustave Le Bon talked about. So that is the purveying problem that is underlying the truth movement in general, in my opinion.
I agree. I mean, you only need to look at your Facebook news feed to see how highly predictable our reactions have become to a range of stimuli, you know, in terms of the buttons that the mainstream media pushes. And I was interested in a term that you used, conspiratainment. Now, I'm assuming that what you mean by that is a high-profile public figure who is put forward by the mainstream media to constantly shut down the kind of theories that tend to rise up around issues that are in the news. Is that what you mean?
Yes. And we have to understand that when we deal with propaganda from the here in the United States, we have the red team and the blue team. And so the blue team has their propaganda.
We have it here too.
Okay. So our red team, the Democrats, they listen to propaganda coming out of the CFR. Eventually, all roads lead to the CFR. Yep. And the red team have their own. It's little talked about, but it's called the Council for National Policy. And they control all the propaganda that comes out to the red team, including all the way down from staunch Republicans, conservatives, libertarians, all the way down to right-wing conspiracy theorists. All of this information is brought forward. The agendas are brought forward by members of the Council for National Policy or people who work directly with members of the Council for National Policy. And so the direction of what we think is true and who is our enemy and who is against us is actually coming out of whatever camp, whatever color, red or blue, you belong to.
Well, we have a more rudimentary form of it here in New Zealand. It's called the Prime Minister's Office. And a right-wing blogger who's got a particularly bad reputation. But it's a rudimentary form of basically the same thing. It's where directive comes from the top as to how stories need to be spun. So that the narrative of the mainstream media goes the way that the political elite want it to go, or the corporate. I mean, that's the problem these days. You can't actually differentiate between the political elite and the corporate elite because they're effectively one the same thing in all of our countries. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Pay attention to the World Economic Forum. I know everybody likes to talk about Bilderberg Group, the secret group that lets everybody know where they're headed and who's going to be there. But pay attention to the World Economic Forum. They don't have anyone standing outside with a bullhorn, but that's where the deals are made. That's where the movers and shakers are. We've got people pitching their sales. We've got people investing, banks and private investors who are qualified. They've got an extra $1 billion or so sitting around not doing anything. They can afford to invest. We had earlier this year at Davo Bezos, we had Bill Gates pitching a sale. I watched him. It's a 54-minute clip. I don't know if it's still on YouTube, but search for it. He's actually, if you know the pitch, he's pitching a sale to the investors in the audience, telling them why he needs more money for his vaccine initiatives. Al Gore did the same thing. I heard him pitch the sale for about 25, 35 minutes. He's out there talking to the investors sitting in the audience, asking for money to invest in depopulation based on global warming, because if we had less people, there would be less global warming. That's his rationale. The problem that we have is the problem that you were talking about. They are one and the same. The elite are the elite because they have corporations, because they have very successful corporations. And because of that, they are able to have a huge cash flow. And because they have a huge cash flow, they look bigger than they actually are. And because they look bigger than they actually are, they're able to sit down and talk to people that you and I have heard of or maybe seen on television, but would never meet in real life.
So earlier on, you talked about how the marketing of the mainstream media, how the mainstream media has been used, is effectively to push our buttons. It's to elicit emotional reactions from us, even at a very subtle level. So that suggested to me straight away that the way to for all of us, the pathway for all of us to, I guess, evolve beyond the influence that the media has upon our conscious minds, or our unconscious is what it really taps into. That's what elicits the emotional reaction. The way to evolve beyond the type of control that it has over our consciousness is to actually start taking responsibility for our own emotional reactions to what we're seeing and reading. In other words, instead of necessarily leaping to judgment about something we read and automatically forming conclusions without doing any research, perhaps to go and start doing research or finding ways to move beyond our emotional reactions, our immediate emotional reactions to what we're seeing and reading. What do you think about that?
That is exactly what we need to do. We need to stop reacting and start acting. We need to recognize that this, oh, wow, this makes me upset, or, oh, wow, I am very touched, or whatever that emotion is, just take a step back and start doing some research and start looking into what they're claiming. Make sure that it's contextual. You know, a lot of people take things way out of context. I watched a video last night. Someone sent me a video with Walter Cronkite, and he is talking and received an award concerning one world government, by the way. And the title of the video was Walter Cronkite, I Want to Sit at the Right Hand of Satan. And so I'm watching this and I'm waiting for him to say this, and it's taking a while. And so I'm surfing on Facebook and all of a sudden I hear him say it. So I backed it up about 5 minutes and understood the context in which he's saying this. Well, it's interesting because he says he is all for one world government, and he thinks that one world government will bring peace. But people like Pat Robertson, who, by the way, is part of the Council for National Policy, he's one of the founding members, he says that one world government will only come when Jesus returns. And Walter Cronkite says, I don't want to wait for Jesus to return. So if Pat Robertson says that the only way that we'll have one world government on this earth before Jesus comes is through Satan, then I'll sit at the right hand of Satan. It's an off-color comment, but it's not an admission that he's a Satanist. In context, he's responding to Pat Robertson's claim that the only way we're going to have true one world government is if Jesus returns.
Well, and
Go ahead.
Well, what I heard from what you said, and you explained the interpretation really clearly. So what I heard from what you said that was that Walter Cronkite was effectively expressing his, not anxiety, but he was emphasizing his wish or his desire that this would happen sooner rather than later.
Yes, absolutely. And by making that off-color comment, he's responding to Pat Robertson's comment, and exactly in context, it cannot be interpreted any other way than you're interpreting it. And so context is extremely important. We can take a word or a phrase out of anything and make it seem like anything we want. But we have to understand with facts and evidence, we have the ability to know what happened, who did it, who funded it, what they were doing, when they were doing it, who were their accomplices, and what they were planning on doing it with. So we know exactly who to punish and what to stop, what to make sure never happens again. If we have to write a law about it, if we have to just make a spectacle of them, whatever it takes to make sure that that never happens again. Without facts and evidence, we have supposition and conjecture, and we can spin our wheels forever. I mean, how long are we going to talk about JFK? The problem is with speculatory media, you have purveying ideas that are theories and suppositions, and they never come to a complete end because that's not the point. With 24-hour news media outlets, they have a problem. Since 9/11, they have been on the air 24 hours a day and spent all of this money and invested all of this time and hired all these people and created all these shows. And they have investors and they have advertisers who are looking on a return. And so in order to maintain the idea that there's always a crisis, they take everything and blow it up out of proportion. A lot of the initial reports are contradictory, and they are just blown out of proportion. And look, just recently, CNN started talking again about the missing Malaysian flight. And they had 24-hour coverage about this. It was ridiculous. They had all these models and all these 3D images. It was insane what was going on. But the reason why these things happen and the reason why we get all of this attention to these things is because they have money that they need to make, and they're not making it because we don't need the 24-hour coverage anymore. But since they spent all of this money, they've got to get a return on it.
Yeah, you've actually just highlighted one of the most important shifts I've seen happen in the media in my lifetime, certainly in the last it's expanded rapidly in the last 10 years particularly, is the degree to which the media shapes the news now instead of actually reporting it. Right across the Western world, there appears to have been a massive shift away from investigative journalism towards what I call tabloid kind of 3.8-second soundbite, bang, 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 you know, bash out the headlines, shape the media, shape public opinion, push everything in a certain direction. And it always appears to be in the direction that the incumbent political party at the time wants it to go in, or their opposition, and so on it goes. But what we're not getting anymore is actually the news. We're getting told what to think. We're getting our opinions shaped. And that scares the hell out of me, because we live in an era now, and I know this is happening in the United States, it's certainly happening in New Zealand and Australia, the most frightening aspect of the media's power now is that accusations have actually become proof. And this is the problem. This is the biggest danger, in my mind, to our freedom. And our rights, is the fact that somebody can stand up now, a high-profile individual or group can stand up, issue an accusation which immediately becomes a headline, and half the population just accepts that is all the proof that is necessary to judge the person being accused or the group being accused as guilty. And that's a really frightening development, and it's become way more prevalent in the last 10 years than I ever saw it happen before. There used to be at least some journalistic integrity when I was a kid, but it doesn't appear to happen anymore. What do you think about that?
That is my battle. I think that's why I didn't fit in. You know, when I first became a journalist in independent media, everyone wanted me, and I realized that unethical practices and immoral practices with infotainment and conjecture is not responsible journalism. And I want to bring facts and evidence to my audience. And it may not be popular, but that's what's actually going to stop. Whatever your problem is, if you have facts and evidence, it's going to stop it. Conjecture and theory is not going to, but conjecture and theory keeps people in that fight or flight. It keeps people in that emotional reactory mode. And so they're more willing to, they make great consumers. So whatever it is, if they're selling a product or they're selling an idea or they're selling a movement or they're selling a protest, whatever it is, they're more likely to know, well, they're likely to know that their audience is more receptive to their message because of the way in which they're packaging it. And with the independent media and the opinion that is the basis, and like you were saying, an accusation then becomes, well, I have to prove that that's wrong. Well, how can I prove a negative? I have this information. And once the information is out, let me give you an example. I have a friend who owns an independent media website, and he put out this article. And after it was published, he wanted me to vet it. And I said, well, I can't. I can, but it doesn't matter. See, you've already poured mud into the river, so I can't unmud the river. You can't go to publish without knowing that all of your sources and all your facts are absolutely accurate and true. So if I come out with an article proving or disproving it, it's either going to validate what people already read, or it's going to validate what people already read. Because even if it's adversarial, or even if it's evidence-based adversarial, it doesn't matter, because they already believe what they first read. That is the subtle psychology that is happening with media that people don't realize. They are completely under the spell. And I did want to mention opinion media. I remember when that started in the 80s in America, with like shows like Hard Copy, which Bill O'Reilly went on to be one of the most opinionated media commentators on the planet, as far as my generation is concerned.
He's the Fox News guy, isn't he?
Yes. And he started on Hard Copy, which was a tabloid journalism television show that ran for 30 minutes. There was a show called First Edition with Deborah Norville. That was also tabloid journalism. And Entertainment Tonight and Entertainment Weekly, before TMZ, these were the shows that were on. And I remember watching them in the 80s. And this was on right before the news happened. So right before the news, or after the news at 6 o'clock or before at 5 o'clock, you would watch these infotainment shows and think that you were getting actual facts and information, and then you'd go on to watch the actual news and think you were getting facts and information, and then maybe there would be another infotainment show in between your sitcoms, and then you'd go on to the news. And this is how the day went as far as programming in the 80s that I remember growing up. And it's so influential, because now we think that people's opinions are facts. So you have all these media commentators coming out. You have Glenn Beck and Abby Martin, and you have Ben Swan, and you have Bill O'Reilly and Bill Maher and even Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert. You have all these media commentators coming out, and because of X or Y reason why they have credibility, the audience perceives that credibility is justified. So everything that they say now becomes fact, and that's just not true. You can sit down and watch an educational show, which I've shown my son. I homeschool my son. And today we were watching an episode of Bill Nye the Science Guy. And I was helping my son understand the difference between facts and evidence. And when Bill Nye is saying something that he that is his opinion based on his scientific knowledge, but it's not necessarily a fact. And how subtle the change is from factual information to supposition. And media commentators, they build their entire career on this. They stake their entire life on this. Their entire platform is dedicated to A, the sales pitch, and B, knowing how to work the emotional reactive nature of their audience and target them with specific ideas that actually can be factually verified, wrapped up in supposition and theory and opinion, so that the audience can't tell the difference, so that they assume, because they believe that this person has credibility for X or Y reason, which is usually an evidence that's provided by them,
right,
then they believe that everything that person says is fact, even though maybe 50% of it or more is actually supposition.
Right. So in other words, if I was going to encapsulate my understanding of what you just said, what we've got is a situation where we have in all of our countries, we have high-profile media commentators who are consciously shaping public opinion by appealing to the unconscious desires and you know, beliefs of their listeners and viewers and readers. In other words, pushing buttons, emotional buttons that get you know, desired reactions, basically.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. So, because this is the thing that really, this is a real, what's the word? It's a hobby horse of mine at the moment, Suzanne. It's the degree to which I am concerned about the wider public who are wrapped in cotton wool and don't really want or, you know, don't think they need to know about what a lot of my activist friends, you know, the kind of issues that a lot of my friends are raising. What I'm interested in is my friends themselves, the people who I'm surrounded by, the people who are actively trying to shape public opinions themselves. They're trying to provide a counterbalance to the sheer might of the mainstream media and the fact that the public opinion is being pushed in a certain way. I'm interested in appealing to my friends to really encourage them to get away from the soundbite mentality that they themselves have fallen into. You know, you must have noticed this yourself. You post something on Facebook, it might be a video, for instance, or an audio recording that you've done. And have you ever noticed how some of your friends actually click like before they could possibly have even listened to it? It's that kind of behavior that I really want to talk about in the next segment. And so that we can you know, help people in the so-called truth movement to rise above their most immediate reactions that they have to this kind of stuff, so that they can begin helping to shape it in a different direction. Because I don't think we can do that as long as we're stuck in reaction mode. So you're just with the Independent Kiwi Show, and we're just going to take a break. We'll be right back. With the Independent Kiwi Show, I'm your host Paul Carruthers, and we're talking to Suzanne Posol in the United States. Suzanne is with us this week talking about the influence of the mainstream media, and just as, or if not more importantly, our reactions to the mainstream media's efforts and attempts to shape our opinions and shape our worldviews. So welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you.
I want to talk about how, in this segment, I want to talk about how the people we know who are involved in the activists and in the movement for positive change, I'll phrase it, how they are influenced by the media, and what steps can we take to identify when we're being spun a load of crap by the media. How can we rise above having our own buttons pushed, so that we're not stuck in reactionary mode to everything that's happening, and so that we can actually get out there and start writing and producing information that reshapes the opinions? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, first of all, we need to start bringing facts and information, credible sources. And to be honest with you, when the mainstream media uses anonymous sources, they are talking about their opinion. They use some sources say or anonymous sources say. And this information is not verifiable, and it's only by the opinion of the journalist and the media outlet, and based on your trust in whether or not they tell you the truth. And that's nothing. That's a hill of beans. So we need to verify facts, and we need to bring facts to our audience. Supposition and interesting sort of pseudosciences should be separated as opinion, and understand that only facts and evidence, even in those circles, can be trusted and regurgitated, I guess, or passed around or shared, because the facts and evidence of what is actually happening means that we have a viable way of making sure that this stops and the people that are doing it stop what they're doing. But as long as we have supposition and as long as we have reactionary instances where we buy into whatever it is we're being sold, we cannot step out and say, oh, wait a minute, I'm reacting. Oh, wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. Let me go look that up and make sure that that's actually true. And I've done that with my peers. When I see that something is absolutely bogus, I will point it out, because at least the people that I'm speaking to in social media will understand that this is not factual information. The difference between an op-ed piece and a news article.
Right. Because one of the things that really concerns me is I see a lot of people, they just don't read things properly. They pay scant attention. Somebody might take a lot of trouble to actually write an article, for instance, and fill it, cram it with information which is, you know, verifiable. They produce their research to show how they arrived at the conclusions they did, you know. And what I find happens a lot of the time, even with people who claim to be conscious, activists who are conscious of what they're doing, a lot of people just pay scant attention. And a lot of people sort of will read three paragraphs of a 50-paragraph article and form their conclusions on that based on the first three paragraphs they read. It really concerns me. I can't see how we're actually going to change anything if we just sort of keep approaching life in that way. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, I guess what I'm asking you is, how do we encourage people to consider things more slowly, carefully, when we're stuck in a paradigm where everybody's attention is distracted outside of themselves and everybody's sort of in a very fractious kind of state, it would appear, in society? How do we actually slow down and just consider things more carefully before actually responding to them rather than just reacting to them? How do we actually help people achieve that?
Well, we have to have conversations like we're having today. Take a step back, folks. Every time, take a step back. I do it myself. Just recently, there was a shooting at a high school that was close to a family member of mine. And so I was very concerned that this child actually went to that high school, because I just couldn't remember at the moment. And I called and I was very concerned. The reaction to information is what they're looking for. So let's not give them that. Let's sit back for a minute and say, okay, what's going on here? And let's not use our belief systems in order to justify justify our opinion of what's going on. Because we can't do that. Every instance is an individual instance, and it has its own narrative. It has its own reasons. And we can't just automatically say everything's a false flag. Everybody's crisis actors. Nothing exists. Nobody dies. You know?
Yep. I've seen it happen time after time after time. And the problem is that the narrative and the rhetoric of one side ends up being just with that scenario, it ends up being just as unbelievable as the other side. And so nobody wins it in the end.
The problem is, and I'll use this shooting as an example. It was a high school. This kid was going to be the homecoming king, very popular. Everyone automatically said crisis actors and yada, 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 and it all came out. Now, the narrative coming out of the mainstream, and I read about 30 articles the first day, and kept reading articles throughout the subsequent days, all throughout the weekend. And my conclusion is, and this makes total sense, folks, this kid got upset. There was a love triangle involved, and he brought a gun and shot the people involved. Now, why would he do that? Think about what we've been exposing our children to and what is acceptable to expose our children to over the last 50 years. And it's acceptable. It used to be, when I was a kid, I remember when the rating system came out for television shows. And so everybody had to memorize what Y meant or what, you know, all these different letters meant. And they sent out all this stuff to people who had cable boxes. And what that ended up doing was giving all of these programming outlets a way to put the programming on that is inappropriate by putting that rating system up at the top left corner. And if you missed it at the beginning of the show and you just let your kid watch it, well, then fooey on you. You should have known. You should be a good parent. You should know what your kids are watching, yada, yada, yada. The problem is it gave license for more and more violent and sexual explicit content to be put to younger and younger audiences for longer durations. So this young man, who's probably been playing violent video games for a very long time and watching violent and sexually explicit television for a very long time and movies as well, and going out with his friends and acting it out and what teenagers do, he made a poor choice. And he had an emotional reaction to something that all teenagers have an emotional reaction to. And because he'd been exposed to all this violence and sex, he decided that it was an appropriate response to commit murder.
Because it had been normalized in his mind.
Yes, it is no more complicated than that. But no one wants to talk about that. What they want to talk about is...
You've just highlighted... The biggest evil, I think, that the media has created or has perpetuated is the fact that it has the rhetoric of the mainstream media has normalized the process of dehumanization. We have dehumanized so many different groups of people and sectors of society and individuals in my lifetime that I've seen on headlines, and it's been done in often a profoundly unfair and one-sided way, that it's become normal to actually, we've virtually accepted that certain people and certain groups of people basically don't have the same rights, aren't entitled to the same rights. And the thing that scares me is there's no shortage of people I know who claim to be social justice activists who yet blatantly still segregate off certain groups and just say, no, those people are just beneath the rest of us. And that scares the hell out of me, is the degree to which we, many of us, still buy into this stuff.
We're still on the red team, blue team. We still believe in the left-right paradigm. We think that, you know, the elite buy off all of our politicians, but we still want to vote for Rand Paul. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
The fact that that's happening is a clue that this is not a truth movement. This is a propaganda movement. Mm. And the things that can be verified are the things that hold it together. That's the glue that holds it all together. But then on top of the verifiable facts are all of these wild accusations about crazy stuff that nobody can really prove. And it goes back in history, all these, and nobody can really say what's real and what's not. And it's really conjecture. But it fits in. It sounds cool. It comes with a T-shirt and a DVD, so everybody wants to buy it.
You know
what I mean? That is exactly what's happening. It is it's a way to sell information to people who they realize that they had a target audience that they were not monetizing, and so they've learned to monetize it. And they have their celebrities involved, and those people who rise up to that celebrity status have to give up, they have to know in their heart that they're selling poison to their audience when they sell some of the products that they sell. They have to know that some of the alternative products that they sell are poisonous and harmful to their audience, but they do it anyway because it's money, because it's fame, because it feeds into that I'm special and I am somebody and I'm going to make it in this world and I'm going to be somebody. We took it from in the 1950s and 60s where you go out and get a job and you build a business and then you get your house and your white picket fence and your car and your garage and your 2.3 kids and your dog to... Let's be famous, and who can be famous faster, and can you earn fame in your childhood, or do you have to work for it, and how much can you monetize it, to the internet where anyone can be famous. And so we moved from reality television to YouTube and Vine, and so now everyone is famous, everyone is doing it, and those who do it well get huge followings and become as big a celebrity as they want.
Yeah, I look, again, you know, it's going back to what something I touched on earlier on, where we have the scenario these days where somebody can stand up and point the finger at somebody else, it turns into a headline, and the next minute half the population has accepted that accusation as all the proof they need that the person having the finger pointed at them is guilty. What that identifies is that accusations are not proof, and I'll repeat that, people. Accusations are not proof of anything other than the fact that an accusation has been issued. How can you explain to people exactly what is the difference between facts and evidence, Suzanne?
Yes. You go to a doctor. He walks into the room and looks at you for 10 minutes, asks you a couple of questions, and tells you you have stage 4 cancer and he's going to start you on chemotherapy next week. Mm-hmm. Would you want him to run some tests and maybe show you some evidence that you need to be on chemotherapy?
Hell yes.
If your neighbor came to you and said that your wife or your husband or significant other is cheating on you, would you go to the courthouse the next day and file for divorce without facts and evidence? Would you end a marriage over that? If you were in a courtroom, you would definitely want to know that the prosecutor had facts and evidence against you and not just supposition that he and a couple of cops got together and made up a story and they're going to tell it to the judge. And you would really want to make sure that your defense attorney had facts and evidence to disprove the facts and evidence of the prosecutor. If it's most important in our most important moments that we demand facts and evidence to prove what is happening, why don't we demand it of our news media?
Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, but why don't we demand it of ourselves? That's the thing that scares me, Suzanne. It's just, you know, the amount of people all you need to do is turn on Facebook to see this. You can usually find an example of it within the first minute of being online. Is the amount of people that just leap to conclusions based on the most scant evidence. Barely any evidence.
It's how they've been conditioned to think. Mm-hmm. It goes back to the opinion media that happened in the 80s, that explosion, that then credible or quote-unquote credible news sources, the mainstream media started having opinion people, and then that gave rise to all of the Anderson Cooper and Rachel Maddow. And even Barbara Walters would not have her career without opinion-based news because she moved from being a credible journalist to just sitting there getting people to cry, and now she sits with a bunch of women and gabs in the middle of the day. That transition is a transition that has to do with corporatocracy, has to do with marketing, has to do with sales, has to do with propaganda, and it all fits together.
Dumbing down the population as well. I mean, here's the thing. You've just actually described the shift from news to entertainment, and this is the thing that news has actually become a form of entertainment.
Yes, absolutely it is. And yeah, it's unfortunate because there are real things happening and there are things that need to be exposed and there's a definite need for journalism. But now that it's become entertainment and now that it's become a commodity and now that it can be monetized properly with native advertising, which is where the marketing firm gets together with the editor of a newspaper and they write a complete commercial and put it out as if it were legitimate news with source links and everything. And that's happening just in mainstream, but also in alternative.
I can't speak for anybody else. I mean, we can all ultimately only speak for ourselves. But my personal approach to taking responsibility for my own worldview, for my own reactions and my own responses, is I've installed my own personal kind of spell checker or self-correct mechanism. And what I mean by that is, specifically what I now do is I ask myself whenever I sense that I'm reacting to something without a whole lot of evidence, you know, that I've just read or just seen, the first thing I ask myself now, my self-correct mechanism, is to ask myself, how much am I allowing my own biases, my own prejudices, my own beliefs and my own opinions, how much do I need this information to agree? I guess what I'm saying is it's human nature that we tend to only want to see information, or we only support or believe information, which basically ultimately supports our own biases and prejudices about something, right? So we tend to dismiss information that doesn't fit with our own bias and prejudices. We see evidence of that all the time. You've only got to watch a comment thread on Facebook where people are arguing over a subject to see how that happens. But we all do it. I do it. I know I do it. So my self-correct mechanism is to actually stop myself from doing it. To whenever I have an emotional reaction to something, to actually go away and do my research and dig deeper, find out whether that reaction is actually justified, or whether or not I'm actually just reacting out of the fact that I've just had my buttons pushed because this information happens to support a suspicion or a belief that I've held for a long time anyway. What are your thoughts about that?
Pew Research Journalism just did a study, and they showed that out of the 10,000 plus participants, 67% of them go with the news media that fits their own personal belief about what's going on.
There you go. Yep.
We're already doing it. So yep. All they did is they filled in the gap. They know that we're going to go with and believe whatever fits our personal paradigm based on our perception of the world. So they just filled in the gap. They created Fox News. They created CNN. They created MSNBC. They created the alternative media in order to fill in the gap, because there's a whole market dollar that they were missing out on.
Yeah.
And so now they've filled in the gap. And independent journalists are now realizing, wait a minute, that's what's happening. Hold on a second. And when I see it in the alternative and independent media, it blows the top of my head clear off, because that is supposed to be the last bastion. And what I'm seeing more and more is marketing, sales, salesmen, infotainers, media commentators. They'll tell you right on their Twitter feed or right on their website that they are a media commentator. Glenn Beck was on The View, and this was a couple of years ago. This was before he has The Blaze or anything like that, but he had a thing going on with Whoopi Goldberg and Barbara Walters. But during that, Barbara said to him, "Don't you check your facts and evidence before telling your audience something that's not true?" And he said, "No, I'm a media commentator. I'm not an investigative journalist. I just comment on the news." That's the problem. That's the problem. We've got a lot of infotainers, celebutants, broadcasters who are commenting on the news who are not journalists, and they let you think that they have some sort of credible reason to be there. The only reason why they're there is because the outlet that they work for decided that they were the best salesman for that job. Okay. Yep. They thought that person, the way that they look, the way they present themselves, the way that they speak, that would be the best salesman for that job. And that's the only reason why they have that seat. And when they stop doing their job, you'll see that somebody else comes along and takes their job on. And all of a sudden, you're just watching the new guy. Look at The Tonight Show. The Tonight Show is a perfect example. Johnny Carson, nobody thought he could be replaced. Well, guess what? Jay Leno did a great job, and everybody forgot about Johnny Carson. And now everybody's forgetting about Jay Leno with Jimmy Kimmel. The thing is, they understand that as the times change, we need new celebrities in front of us, new people to tell us what to do, new people to look up to aspire to be. And so they bring out those thought leaders. They bring out those media commentators. They bring out those celebrities and hand them to us, and then we sort of fit the mold based on what we have to choose from.
It's a metaphor for the degree to which we put people on pedestals and elevate them to sort of positions above ourselves and say, "Oh, you know, I'll take my cues from you." And here's the thing, Suzanne: people in the so-called freedom and rights movement, social justice activists, and all the people in the truth movement, they do the same thing with their own idols. This is the trap that we're all in, is that we're all sort of hoping somebody's going to stand up and they'll become the person that we look to as the beacon. And the reality is all we're doing is creating a future person who's going to get shredded as soon as we get bored or they do something that we don't agree with.
Yes. And the problem is we have low self-esteem.
Yeah.
And really, it's just that simple. And yep. It is programmed low self-esteem. We're taught this from a very early age. Babies don't care if they have a booger hanging out of their nose, and they don't care if they've got spit. You know, they don't care. They're having a good time. They don't notice. My 3-year-old likes to dress herself now. I just let her do it. She doesn't care that it doesn't match and that she looks crazy, that she looks like a character from an 80s cartoon that nobody remembers. She is having a good time. And as she grows up, she's going to learn that some things are acceptable and some things aren't. And it's my job to show her those things. But it's also my job to point out this is social programming and I may not agree with it, but you're going to have to do this because that's how it is. And if you don't, you're going to have these problems to deal with. And that's an unfortunate thing that I have to teach my children, but I do. Because we have programming that is socially acceptable. And when it becomes unacceptable, then it gets exposed and we all say, we don't like that anymore. It's like in the 60s. Everyone was doing LSD. Everybody was smoking pot. We had Woodstock. We had all that stuff going on. And then Charlie Manson came out and the Tate murders. And everybody said, oh, wait a minute. You know what? We took that a little bit too far. And they went ultra conservative in the 80s. There's a reason why that happened. And with that shift came the ultra-conservatism that shaped the baby boomers, that now the baby boomers are now in charge. They are the Harry Reids. They are the Dick Cheneys. They are the people who are in those positions of power right now who came off of their parents in the Greatest Generation and were crazy in the 60s and then realized, oh, wait a minute, we shouldn't do that, and went straight to, we have to live a conservative life, we have to abide by these certain rules, we have to abide by this religion.
I couldn't agree with you more. To wrap up, Suzanne, give me this. Give our listeners this. What is your hope? What is your vision? How on earth do we turn this around? How do we overcome the power that the mainstream media has to create a different narrative?
My journalism on OccupyCorporatism.com and the journalists who contribute to the USIndependent.com, this is all fact-based information. This is not conjecture. This is not theory. We do have an op-ed section on the US Independent, and it is clearly stated these are opinion pieces. They are not meant to be taken as fact. However, the facts and evidence that I bring in my news articles, that's my contribution, and I continue to speak about this privately, publicly, on radio shows, and as well in social media, because I want people to understand we have to get away from the theory and conjecture. And like you said, accusation is not fact. When we have the facts, then let's deal with the problem.
Right. Okay. So there you have it. There you have it, folks. What we're talking about is that get back to basics. When you're presented with any information, do your research. Satisfy yourself that what you're reading is factual and not opinion, because opinions are not facts and accusations are not proof. So this is the Independent Kiwi Show. I'm with my guest Suzanne Posel from the United States, and we've been talking about the influence of the mainstream media and our reactions to it. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.